Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take for April 19th, 2026. I'm your host here, Blois Olson. It's supposed to be a little nicer today, 51 and sunny. Hope you enjoy a little time outside. The idea that we were in the 70s and middle of the week and got chilly during the week is a little, during the weekend is a little disappointing here. We're following many stories, and in the Saturday newsletter, highlighted two that are particularly interesting right now. One is the Star Tribune story by Ryan Faircloth about the relationship between Governor Tim Walz, who's in Spain this weekend, and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. The question is, how engaged is Flanagan in governing the state? It doesn't seem like she's very engaged, and the rift between Walz and Flanagan is real. I don't need to get into the dirty laundry, but it's going to be a factor in the Senate race. The other story is an exclusive in the Wall Street Journal by our friend John McCormick, who reports that an accounting error, quote unquote, is the reason why Representative Ilhan Omar's wealth in her financial report to Congress has gone from millions to less than a million. She calls it an accounting error, which is a pretty big error considering her husband is a venture capitalist. I think both of these stories will continue to drive things throughout the week. This past week showed campaign cash updates showing Amy Klobuchar having a major advantage over the Republican field in this space, but cash is only one piece of the puzzle, and this might be the greatest episode of political Moneyball that we watch through the fall, because if the issues continue to be headwinds for Democrats on state governing, all the money won't necessarily help, but it will help get out the vote, which Republicans struggle to do. As we're starting to get towards the end of the legislative session, this week's show is about what legislative leaders see as an opportunity, as the issues, and how we can do it. Together with the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce, our firm Fluence Advisory kicked off and relaunched the Twin West Legislative Breakfast, a long tradition. And we had legislative leaders, Senator Mark Johnson, Senator Nick French, Senate Representative Jamie Long, and Representative Harry Niska at a breakfast Friday morning. And I kicked off the conversation asking about regret. When we come back, that conversation about what are the issues and what are the regrets. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to News Talk 830 WCCO. This is Sunday Take. Welcome back to Sunday Take. We're going to kick off this excerpt from yesterday's Twin West Legislative Breakfast with the question, do Republicans have any regrets of not getting more out of the last budget session? And do Democrats have any regrets out of the 2023 session? Here's that discussion now. So I want to make the most out of this conversation. We'll probably have audience questions at the end, but we'll start with Senator Frentz. We'll kind of come towards me. We're having a little flashback here. And we're not going to spend a lot of time going backwards, but I thought we'd start with, regrets. So I have a question for DFLers and Republicans about regrets. For Democrats, is there anything from the 2023 trifecta that you regret that deserves to still be fixed in this legislative session?
Well, first of all, thanks, Blois. Glad to see everybody here. Thanks for all you do. I'm Nick Frentz from the city of North Mankato, representing the Mankato area, and very glad to join you. A business owner of 30 years, member of the Greater Mankato Growth Chamber, carry the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce endorsement. And my answer, Blois, is I still feel that paid family medical leave can be tweaked in a way that brings businesses to us and says that they're part of it, as opposed to what I see is a little more, my words, not yours, confrontation between the employer and the employee. Your businesses are successful when you have the best working relationship between management and labor. And I think we could do that. I do not think that will be this session. And I agree that not everybody in my party sees it the same as I do, but hope to bring that forward if I was lucky enough to be reelected, which is a different panel.
You're right. We're not covering that today. For Republicans, the question is there anything you regret not bargaining harder on last session during the budget that maybe you had leverage and didn't use it for?
You know, I think the one thing I would say we ran into a problem with late in the process, there was bipartisan support in the Senate for the Office of Inspector General. I wish there had been bipartisan support in the House for that last year. We could have gotten that done across the finish line last year. I think what we're going to end up with, I'm hopeful what we'll end up with, is something that's very close to the framework that did pass the Senate last year. And I think that's something that it would have been better for the state of Minnesota if we had gotten that process rolling last year instead of waiting this year to finish that.
Representative Long, any regrets from the trifecta or things that still should maybe take a second look from that were passed that year?
Nope. I think 2023 was a great session.
Okay. Mark Johnson, any regrets from last year? And I'm glad you could join us today. I know you weren't invited yesterday.
We did get in a nice game of baseball while they were meeting yesterday, so it was a good opportunity.
You're always invited here.
Thank you. Appreciate that. No, I think last year, you know, we were the only minority caucus in the legislature, and so at the very end of session, we had a good opportunity to do a number of things. One of the things I'm most proud of is our work on the data center bills that allowed, even though the governor and Democrat leaders were really trying to exit the data centers from the state of Minnesota, we were able to use some leverage in a way that allowed us to at least be competitive in the region to maintain data centers here in the state. And so that was one that we were pretty proud of, even though we had limited leverage last year.
There's, as we're in a non-budget session, it's quote a bonding session, there's a lot of issues that in and around a tax bill this year. Is there going to be a tax bill? Yes or no? And what's really important to have in the tax bill? We'll start with you, Mark.
Yeah, the tax bill has a number of factors that I think we'd be looking at going forward. You know, we talked a little bit, maybe some of the nurse or the hospital issues that are going to be in there. There's a chance that we're going to get that done this year. But at this point, what is happening over in the House, just we just don't have a good feel from the Senate side of things what's going to actually be possible to get through the House and what's going to be possible to get through the Senate at this point. You know, the tax chairs have notoriously been a little bit at odds with each other, so that's going to also put in a little bit of an issue of actually getting done with a tax bill at this point. But we'll see. I'm optimistic.
Jamie, what do you want to see if there is a tax bill to make sure it gets done?
Well, I think there's been good ongoing conversation around HCMC, and there's a tax proposal out there that would extend the current sales tax that exists for Twin Stadium and expand it to help take care of HCMC. So I know that Chair Davids and Chair Gomez have been having good conversations around that proposal. That I think is a high priority, as we've heard, for the state and the region. And then, you know, I'm sure there's going to be ongoing conversations around other tax provisions, but I'm hopeful that if we do any real tax spending, that we are paying for it as well. We know that there's ongoing fiscal challenges for the state.
Representative Niska.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are a lot of issues in the tax bill. What I would say my top priority is to lower and simplify taxes as much as possible for Minnesotans and Minnesota businesses. And that means that we should do as much tax conformity as we can. And there's some tax conformity that wouldn't cost any money. That's really, you know, frankly, pretty disappointing to me that we haven't already done. We haven't already done I'm sure I don't have to tell everyone in this room, the pass-through entity tax, which is a zero-cost thing to the state of Minnesota that just is a way for Minnesota job creators to not have to pay as much in federal tax. That should have happened before March 15th. It should have happened before April 15th. The reason it didn't is because Democrats weren't willing to support it happening at that point in time, I think because they wanted to negotiate, you know, something else in exchange for something that's literally everyone should agree is a good idea for Minnesotans. There's a scholarship tax credit that would benefit Minnesota students, wouldn't cost Minnesota a dime to do that either. And then there are tax conformity things where we could lower taxes on Minnesotans that you know, we have to figure out how they fit into the bigger picture. But lowering taxes as much as possible for Minnesotans, simplifying the taxes for Minnesotans and Minnesota businesses, that's the one of the big things we got to get done.
Senator Frenz?
I think you'll see a tax bill. I want to echo some things my colleagues have said. HCMC is a very high priority for us, but it's not as simple as it sounds. I come from about 90 miles southwest of here. Two hospitals in my immediate area are going under. And so the ballpark tax was sold to Greater Minnesota Twin season ticket holders. We're going to pay for the stadium, and then the tax will go off. Now we're hearing about a sales tax increase. And one thing that is bipartisan is we've got to fight a little harder for the Minnesotans that have a little less. A 1% sales tax is about the most regressive thing I've heard Minnesota talk about since I've been in the Senate. And by the way, that's 9 years, 3 months, and 10 days, not that I'm keeping track. So let's be careful. And for my business owner brothers and sisters in my area and for all of you, just keep in mind, we need you to be a part of the conversation about economics. Tax cuts are considered spending at the Capitol. That's a good thing from a balanced budget. You want to spend money, it has to come from somewhere. But we got to be careful that we lift up those who have a little less. And one thing voters have told both parties in terms it's not hard to understand is we are stressed over the cost of living, roof overhead, food on table, clothes on back, and both parties better be listening. I can't resist, since we're talking a little bit about the stadium, we have to promote events in Minnesota. It's not just Target Field, it's U.S. Bank Stadium, it's our other stadiums. We want people to come to Minnesota to see Taylor Swift, to cheer for a Viking Super Bowl win, or the run towards a Viking Super Bowl win. And we have obligations to keep these stadiums functioning. I live downtown St. Paul. When I'm up here, you're going to hear about St. Paul and the arena there. Think of that as not a question of just what it costs, but what it pays.
Representative Niska, you talked about the tax bill. We talked about HCMC, this kind of dynamic. Healthcare as a whole is the top priority in most polls for Minnesotans. The cost of it, where we're at. Are there things that need to happen for hospitals before the federal cuts go into effect January of next year? Because they're struggling now, and that's before the federal impact of the Big Beautiful Bill.
Obviously healthcare is a very complicated subject, and there's a lot of things that we're working on. Our health folks are working on bipartisan. There's a lot of good discussion happening, especially around how to make Medicaid conformity work, how to make sure that our counties and those who are administering those programs have the tools that they need so that all of that works better. Certainly, you know, we'd all like to make sure that the programs where private payers are basically subsidizing public payers, that disparity tightens up. Not sure that we're going to be able to make progress on that, but we have to make the whole system work better. One key element of it is making sure that we do extend the reinsurance program so that our private health insurance market doesn't collapse going forward. That's something Republicans have been trying to push hard on and haven't gotten a lot of support from Democrats on. But certainly there are a lot of items that the Health Committee folks are working on all those complicated pieces of the puzzle.
Jimmy, where are House Democrats on overall healthcare, not just HCMC right now?
Well, I think we're seeing a real crisis in healthcare, and it's in no small part due to the impacts of HR1. And we have 1 in 4 Minnesotans are covered by Medicaid. 140,000 of those folks are going to lose healthcare once that blinks on, conveniently right after the election, coming into next year. And that is putting a huge amount of stress on our hospitals across the state, including rural hospitals. We can't change that, but we can do some things to help support our hospital systems. And one bill that the Senate passed is a 340B extension and enforcement. And this is a way that rural hospitals have been able to help buy down the cost of prescription drugs and help support their programming. The So far, the House Republicans have, even though it was a House Republican bill, decided that they don't want to enforce that. We've seen that pharmaceutical companies had not been following the law, which is why we were trying to enforce it. So that's gotten stuck, but I'm hopeful that we can get that unstuck before the end of session.
Senator Johnson, you're from a rural area. You're familiar with rural health care. What does rural health care need?
Well, right now, we talked a little bit about HR1 and the impacts of that, but really, our rural hospitals aren't feeling the impacts of HR1. Those things are in the future for the most part going forward. They've been in crisis for quite some time. Right now, the biggest problem is the cash flow that they're seeing within our rural hospitals, where the inflationary costs have been just incredible over the years. And yet the payments that our hospitals receive are sometimes 18 months, 24 months delayed. So all of a sudden you have these inflationary costs and you're being reimbursed for costs that were prior to the 20, 30% inflation that we've seen on some of the medical device products. So it's very difficult for those hospitals to be in business. I've got one in my district that's borrowing money on a monthly basis to make sure that they can make payroll at this point. That's not a sustainable model that they have. And so we're going to have to figure out something real fast for rural critical access care hospitals in this state. Completely different in many ways from the HCMC conversation, but one that a lot of our rural areas are facing.
Representative Long, there's been a big push for...
Senator Frentz.
Oh, Senator Frentz, sorry. I mean, I don't try to skip you that often.
The short version is the reason your businesses are successful is that you've been willing to make tough choices and take some risks. And the American people have asked us for about 25 years, can you possibly stop the crisis in healthcare? And your leadership at the state and federal level has failed. We're either going to reduce the number of people that are insured, or reduce the essential benefits that are required, or reduce the reimbursement for those essential benefits, or it's a mathematical certainty the cost of healthcare is not coming down. I agree with much of what's been said here, and the problem in rural Minnesota is acute. Thank you, Mark, for flagging that. We're watching access close. Do you know what it means to a town of 5,000 to hear that they're no longer going to deliver babies at that hospital? We're up here in the metro now, and I love the metro. It's just vibrant, it's cool, it's got a lot of great stuff. Some people in those towns have been there for 150 years. It's not funny to them. And we continually fail to make the tough choices. Some countries have systems where they don't provide a lot more essential benefits. Try getting cancer treatment for a 78-year-old in Canada. Those are tough choices. And I ask you as business owners and leaders, where are the tough choices and where are we going to make them? The problem we're in is that we ask ordinary Minnesotans. Most of those Minnesotans don't know the name of their state senator and they don't really care. What about healthcare? They stress over it. They're not necessarily sick, but they know they or their loved ones might be. And so I'm encouraging you, Twin West, I'm encouraging business owners everywhere, let's get ready to make some tough choices. And this is a federal matter. And I will say, I'm not the most partisan guy ever, ironic for a Democrat leader, I know, but I do fault HR1, and I fault it in this way. At a time when your nation has $38 trillion of debt, $38 trillion. When my kids were five, they were just tickled when they discovered a trillion is 1,000 billion. $38 trillion we owe. And what do? We pass a bill where the most costly item is a tax cut for the wealthiest Americans, and then we whack healthcare. I agree we have bigger structural problems than that, but just ask yourself, our nation gave a tax cut to the wealthiest American in the same bill where they cut healthcare? Doesn't sound to me like a recipe for success.
You're listening to Sunday Takes, Twin West Chamber legislative leader conversation from Friday. It's in partnership with the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce Influence Advisory, our firm. And it's legislative leaders Nick Frentz, Mark Johnson, Harry Niska, and Jamie Long. We'll be right back. We're going to pick up the forum from Twin West Chamber and the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce with legislative leaders on Friday. Here's that continued discussion.
See, this is old Twin West. We're going to get spicy, aren't we? Feel free, because, you know. Representative Long, I'm going to take a pivot here, because I think that Senator Johnson and Senator Frentz brought up something that we see, and it's an election year, and we're going to have this dialogue, which is this disconnect between Greater Minnesota and the metro. That there is a real sense in Greater Minnesota that Metro Democrats don't understand what their quality of life is, what the priorities in their community are. Can you, what do you hear from your colleagues about that? And what do you try to let your caucus know about the needs of greater Minnesota so that we can have a statewide discussion rather than a noisy conversation, obviously, about just the metro? And by the way, that's driven by media markets and all kinds of other things, not politics, but it's symptomatic of our times.
Yeah. Well, as the sole Twin West representative on the panel up here,
I knew that was coming.
I will say that a lot of this, I think, is, you know, intentionally fueled sometimes for partisan gain. But a lot of the problems we face across the state, you've heard, are not unique to the metro or greater Minnesota. I had the opportunity to go to Bemidji a couple of weeks ago and tour some childcare centers. I was invited to go take some tours, and turns out that the same thing I hear from constituents about access to affordable childcare and the challenges that poses from a workforce standpoint are what they're dealing with in Bemidji. Healthcare challenges are, you know, present across the state. Cost of living challenges are present wherever you are. So I think housing, for example, we've seen great work from both Representative Igo and Representative Howard, who represent, you know, the metro and greater Minnesota, but see some of the same challenges of having access to workforce and affordable housing across the state. So I think a lot of these issues are blown up in the political arena and the debate there, but when you get down to the work at the Capitol, we're seeing the same challenges and are able to, I think, work effectively across region to try to solve those.
Senator Johnson, what do your constituents think about the focus on sometimes the metro, and what do you want metro legislators to know about your area?
That's a really good question. So when Representative Long was talking here about how this is partly made up in politics and it's blown up that way, I completely disagree. What rural Minnesotans are feeling right now is a deafness to the needs and the situation of rural Minnesota. When you go to a childcare facility and you say, well, you're going to have a certain degree in early childhood education to be able to take care of, you know, 3 months up to a one-year-old. Good God, we're just trying to find people to be in those facilities to keep the doors open. It's not about creating more mandates. It's not about creating more rules and regulations. It's about actually having a facility with its doors open to make sure that they have good quality education for moms and dads, for their kids, so they can go to work. You know, when you talk about mandates on businesses, like we see with the paid family medical leave, you're talking about shutting down farms, you're talking about shutting down small businesses. This is the deafness that we're feeling. In the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, you have people. You can do that. You can make these mandates. You'll find the people to actually to fill those positions. We don't have that luxury in rural Minnesota. We don't have that degree that you might need to get a certain job to fill that mandate. So it's irritating for rural Minnesotans to hear these sort of things and tell us, we're taking care of you, rural Minnesota. Just listen to us, because we know how to work things. It's different now. It's different dynamics. It's different economics. Everything is different. And yet we continue to hear the same message, oh, you're just playing politics. It is not. It's reality of rural Minnesota. So, yeah, it's an issue.
Senator Frentz, Minnesota has struggled to grow, both in population and economically. And part of that might be mandates. What do we need to get rid of? How do we help Minnesota grow? Like North Mankato, for instance, that, you know, booming metropolis.
Well, actually, I think I agree with some of the ideology on the Republican side just to this extent. We've got to grow businesses big and small. I was thrilled yesterday. I'm the kind that texts at 5 in the morning after I get done taking a text from Matt Klein, a Bobby Joe champion, never mind that. Senator Klobuchar, who I think is our best candidate on the DFL side for governor, and I think may be the next governor, said we've got to take care of businesses big and small. So the first thing we have to do is see businesses as a partner. People will move to our state if we have more jobs. People will move to our state if we have more of a team spirit. Ask yourselves at your companies, how would it go for you in your bottom line if half the company spent their time talking about how terrible the other half the company was? and how they're cheering for the marketing department to lose, but they want the, you know, accounting department to win. You would go out of business in 10 minutes. Would you play for a football team where half the players are cheering for the other half to fail? Of course not. But we have that sometimes, and we have to partner with our businesses. I love the entrepreneurial spirit. We have bagel shops. I had a car wholesaling license. I'm a partner in a law firm. You can text me your jokes when you're ready. And I think that's one of the biggest things, Blois, is we have to be a welcoming and inclusive state for our businesses. And the irony is, that's one of the things that already makes Minnesota great. We are a welcoming and inclusive people. For 100 years, we've seen the value of bringing people to Minnesota. We did have an increase for the first time in years in domestic in-migration, meaning people who moved to Minnesota. That reverses a trend. And we better sandpaper down some of the rhetoric against businesses and billionaires. And I hope you're asking us about data centers, because I think it's an example of where there's real benefit. Representative Long and I work on clean energy. I'm a big believer that climate is a crisis and it's costing us a fortune now. I don't even want to think about what it's going to be when my kids are older. Data centers build clean energy. The Pine Island data center is building 1,600 megawatts of clean energy and battery storage for free. They're paying for it. I think there's more opportunity for our businesses to help us achieve our goals and make it a better state to live in and make more people move here, weather notwithstanding.
We're going to get to energy issues, don't worry. Representative Niska, I know the session has limited days, and I know there are issues that poll really well, but they're not necessarily issues that move voters to vote one way or another. I'd be remiss if I didn't, you know, think about a debate about trans sports and a Rules Committee hearing about impeachment. Is that the most productive legislative time for the business community in Minnesota?
Obviously, you know, there are a lot of issues facing our state, and there are a lot of things that folks in all of our districts want us to talk about. At the same time, you know, the most fundamental problem, and I wish, you know, one of my Democrat colleagues would have acknowledged this in their regrets about the 2023 session, our public sector is way out of whack with our private sector, and we've got to figure out how to fix that imbalance. Long-term, or our state is not going to be competitive. It's not going to be competitive if we have too much of our of the money sucked out of the public sector, or out of the private sector, and into the public sector. We are not. We might have a one-year blip in positive in-migration, but the reality is the long-term trend for our state is we are lagging behind the rest of the country in terms of economic growth. And we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can talk about contentious issues and try to figure out that fundamental imbalance. But that's the thing where if we are going to thrive long-term, we've got to fix that. We've got to cut taxes, cut mandates, less power in St. Paul, more power in our local communities and our small businesses and our large businesses so that we can empower Minnesotans, hire Minnesotans. If we don't do that, the long-term future of our state is not good.
Senator Johnson, what's the growth feeling in northwestern Minnesota? And what have you seen there that's working for growth, and what do you need for more growth in northwestern Minnesota?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I live on a border community of East Grand Forks, and so I represent all of northwest Minnesota. But then also, you know, a lot of my district has connections with places like the Fargo-Moorhead area and down the line. But we are continually seeing businesses and individuals making that jump. You know, it's not much colder in North Dakota, so they say, well, the taxes are lower, the regulatory environment is quite a bit better, let's make that jump over there. And so, you know, it's that allure, actually, of taxation, of the mandates, of those sorts of things on the other side of the river that has got people moving that way. We continue to try to maintain business. We got some great businesses in northwest Minnesota. You think of legendary ones like Marvin Windows, of Articat, Polaris, those sorts of things. They're up there. They're still thriving. But the thing that is different nowadays is that when they make an expansion, they're not creating jobs up in my neck of the woods. What they're doing is they're going to Tennessee. They're moving to Florida. That's where they're expanding their production lines. You know, there's a number of reasons why, but you know, they're just making it so difficult to have businesses grow and thrive in that neck of the woods. You know, and we talked a little bit about that with the mandates, with the taxes and things like that, but gosh, we just need to tell people across the nation that we want them here. We want to welcome them there. But when they turn on the TV and they see Minneapolis burning down, they see the protests that are constantly happening in this state, they see the conflict with the governor and the president, they see all this stuff going on. You know, Senator Frantz talked about Minnesota being a great place to host an event for a Vikings game, but when you have people saying, we don't want to go to this state because we're scared to be there, that's pretty difficult to really have businesses and individuals come here and want to thrive in the state when they're too scared to come. So we got to switch that around and make this a place that is welcoming.
Representative Long, the data continues to show that there's a couple key areas, many key areas, but two in particular. One, last week, state of hospitality. It's about 30 or 40% higher cost to run a restaurant in Minneapolis than the rest of the state, and St. Paul. And it's about 50% higher than, you know, border towns. Housing is another place where it's about 25% more expensive to build the same house in Minnesota versus Wisconsin or the Dakotas. Are there things that Democrats can do in your caucus or the House that would lower the cost in those sectors? Or do we just need to adapt? And I say that because I know we've talked about this for years, but now we've got years of data, and the data is just showing slow growth, and the actual costs and optimism is just sinking.
Well, to the greater growth question, the challenge that we're seeing in the competition for in-migration, out-migration is we're competing for college grads that are leaving the state, and we're trying to get them back, right? And why we can't compete on mountains or oceans or 70-degree weather all the time, so we have to compete on quality of life. And that includes affordable housing. That includes having access to good healthcare and schools and childcare and outdoor recreation. And the things that appeal to Minnesotans about wanting to live here and not in a place that they might have better weather or better outdoor recreation activities. We know that housing is one of those key challenges where we have some edge on housing affordability compared to other states, not our immediate neighbors, but some of the other states we're competing for college graduates. But we're losing that edge. We're seeing affordability on the housing side go in the wrong direction. And so that is something that I think we have the ability to work on a bipartisan basis. There's been a lot of good work in the housing committee this year. And I think there's more to do. I think we understand that as a state, we have a lack of affordable housing, and there are things that the state can do to help remove barriers to build additional affordable housing. But I think that, you know, we have to understand what it is that's attracting folks to the state versus other parts of the country. And if we're talking about the impacts on our business community in the state, I think the biggest negative impact that we've seen on the local business community in the past year has been the sending in of the largest immigration enforcement operation in U.S. history. And we've seen that that has impacted so many small businesses across the state, not just in the metro, and caused a lot of businesses to lay off people. We saw that reflected in the job numbers this past year, where we're, you know, for one of the first times above the national average in terms of unemployment rate. So, you know, don't blame it on the metro, right? This is actually the impact that we've seen from federal government enforcement in our communities.
Representative Long, I want to follow up just because I hear this a lot, and I think the governor has kind of led that cheer. But one event this year does not explain the last couple years. And this is the Twin West tradition. What about the bigger picture? Because we can say that, first of all, we represent hospitality. First quarter is always hard. It was the worst ever this year. But that was a trend of years. It's not just about this year. It's now, how do we build momentum going forward that allows people to want to invest here? Capital is mobile. And the reality is, whether it's housing, restaurants, or commercial real estate. Capital is not coming to Minnesota the way it is our peer cities. What do we need to do to get capital here from around the country?
Well, I mean, you could talk about a bunch of different sectors. We talked a little bit about data centers, and I'm happy to do that. We worked on a bill that would help attract data center capital, and we saw that work this past year. But labor is mobile, too. And we have to attract folks to want to live in the state. And I think the answer I gave previously is how we do that. We can't compete on a lot of other factors when people can live anywhere they want in the country, and often do. And so we need to compete on quality of life.
Representative Niska, I think about your district and your part of the state as kind of in between, right? In between the metro and the north, and but it's an aging suburb, exurb area. What's the mood in your district? What kind of businesses are doing well in the north metro? What kind of businesses are not doing well up there?
Well, my district is growing, but it's a mostly a small and medium-sized business kind of environment. And the problems that I hear about in my district, I think, are the problems that we're dealing with overall, which is government is too costly. Government is too, not only is the public sector too big, it's too expensive, it's too wasteful. I mean, Minnesotans in my district, I think, are like Minnesotans all over the state. They are embarrassed about the billions of dollars of fraud that have happened under, you know, Governor Walz's watch, Keith Ellison's watch, and Democrats. And they are frustrated by the how they're supposed to run their, you know, 13 to 15 employee business when three of their employees are now trying to figure out.
You get a flavor for the spirited conversation we had at the Twin West Chamber Legislative Breakfast in partnership with the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce and Fluence Advisory. You can check out the full audio at fluence-advisory.com or thedailyagenda.com in one of the newsletters. When we come back, this week's take. We're back on Sunday Take. I've talked about this, I've written about it, but I want to call it out because this week just proved it to be true. And this conversation showed it to be true, that the loyalty to the caucus in the legislature is too strong. That you have members who would compromise with the other side, but they're afraid of angering their own party in the legislature. They're also afraid of not getting their endorsement. Harry Niska and Nick Frentz call it out in that conversation. And I would use this as a challenge in the take. Do what's right, regardless of your caucus. When more members start to do that, the legislature will start to make progress on real issues that are impacting Minnesotans. I'll be with Vanita at 6:20 all week. You can always follow along at thedailyagenda.com. This full conversation is available at fluence-advisory.com under our forums section. Until next week, that's the Sunday Take.